Welcome to Holistic Matters, the podcast that's designed to help you become the you that nature intended. We're recording live from the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians annual meeting in Portland, Oregon. With us today is public health specialist Megan Hamrock, who gave a great talk today in one of the afternoon sessions. And so, Megan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
So Megan is trained at Tufts University and has a dual degree in both public policy and also in public health.
Mm-hmm.
So, Megan, you've been through it all. So those are critical issues of our time right now, from food policy and linking food policy to public health. So how did you get interested in public health?
Great question. So I truly, it was one of those aha moments for me, being very interested in nutrition from the beginning and knew it was obviously critical to the best health and well-being you could have. Have a lot of experience being in hospitals and clinics, and I knew that was sort of the avenue, but public health and that community health approach really intrigued me. And then when I was at Tufts University, knew there was several different avenues and programs I could get that experience in, and great city to be involved with all different policy efforts as well as, you know, the leading areas within health and wellness. So it was just a natural transition for me, and I'm very proud of the fact that we've been able to come so far, yet have a lot of ways to go when it comes to those health policies and nutrition wellness.
So more and more public health is becoming a really important, well, not only an important degree, but an important concept, mm-hmm. even to the point where most healthcare practitioners, classic healthcare practitioners, MDs in particular, all want to have an MPH.
Yes.
And it's actually that important because, you know, traditional medicine doesn't really adequately train you on what the issues are of delivering health
mm-hmm.
issues.
Mm-hmm.
Naturopathic community comes the closest to it. And public health and engaging in the public health discussions is an opportunity to expand the reach and the influence of the naturopathic community.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the rare experience of being a public health professional and actually working in community health clinics. And so
yes.
there's a lot of avenues that a public health practitioner can go.
Mm-hmm.
Community health is an important one to go into. And so you've got great experience, whereas most people don't. But tell us a little bit about the challenges of really introducing the concepts of public health, like nutrition, lifestyles,
mm-hmm.
all the important components
mm-hmm.
in a setting that's, it's like where the rubber meets the road. It's the feet on the street. It's mm-hmm. in the midst of the community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There is so many struggles within our communities. Not only environment and physical location play a role, but then just the knowledge and education levels. Whether it's a community health clinic or a local hospital, they're coming in to see something, to get some type of result, but not necessarily that educational concept of what am I supposed to do when I go home? How do I actually translate that into practice? So that application is really, really crucial, especially if they've recently been diagnosed with something or they're, you know, struggling with their own health. In nutrition in particular, it's been very fun to kind of see in real life, you know, we think that they might have this level of knowledge or this level of understanding, but truly we're really going back to those basics and talking about nutrition 101 with these folks. We've come so far in the advances of nutrition where we know so much science, but these folks really just need to know how exactly to go to the grocery store and what should they do with the produce? How do they make it taste good and make sure that they have a clear-cut decision on why they need to make that effort budgetarily for themselves and for their health in the long term.
So what have you noticed in your work in community clinics? I mean, what's that one switch that has to go off, you know, in the mind of the people that you work
mm-hmm.
with in the community
mm-hmm.
that they increase their awareness and appreciation and then action? What is that switch?
You kind of have two different avenues. You've either got the one person who's recently been unfortunately diagnosed with something and they are like, this is my last chance. This is kind of how I have to go ahead and basically make this change now. And then you have the other people who actually have to see and feel it to even experience it. So cooking classes are a great example. It's like they didn't realize what they had the potential to do. I think we have this conception that it's going to be tough, it's going to be tricky, there's too much, it's too hard to navigate. But it really, when you break it down for them and really show them exactly how it can be done and their practical terms, they're okay with it and they get it and it resonates with them. So truly, like taking them to a cooking class, taking them to a grocery store, taking them to these everyday occurrences that they do have and helping them navigate it at their level really switches that light bulb for them. And then they're the displayers of the message in itself. We don't have to do anything after that. They're using that word of mouth in their community, and it's like this ripple effect, which is really cool to see.
So does it stick, you know, once they go through that experience? I mean, is it
It does, right? It does for most, you would think. But it's that repetition that definitely has to happen and help. Just like a habit takes 21 days to form, typically, you can't just expect them to come one time and be sold on anything. So they've got to see it more and more. Always tell people, you've got to be your own advocate for health. You keep buying Cheetos off the grocery store shelves, they're going to stock it. If you start saying, I need avocados, they're going to make them available to you. So just taking advantage of the local atmosphere that you do have and basically making your own policy change, if you would, rather than a formality out of it.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we're here at the annual Naturopathic Convention, which is a powerful opportunity for us to share insights with the delivery in a public forum, mm-hmm. better health care.
Yes.
It's not only about nutrition, which is why the naturopathic physician is so uniquely positioned to be able to be even more effective in the community. But how would you define the important elements that are in the toolbox of a naturopath and the toolbox of practitioners who get this total lifestyle?
Yes, we touched a bit about it today on the whole group sessions and kind of that. I think that peer support is a really big thing that people really should be relying on as well. People do have that power to be able to build off of each other and kind of learn from each other. I think that's a really classic piece that we can implement into a lot of different community clinics. But then on top of that, you've got to just look at it from a holistic approach. We can't just be singling out one or two different items because everyone's going to have a different starting point, and that readiness truly makes a big difference in how you're going to approach that change with that group.
So how do you do that in the community care setting, right? I mean, you can offer all the teaching classes mm-hmm. and nutrition classes mm-hmm. and yoga classes possible,
right?
But that whole concept of readiness is like a big deal. Is there a way that you assess that in the clinics?
There's definitely lots of different tools and assessment tools, literally surveys that you can ask with these folks. That's much better suited in a one-on-one type of setting so they don't feel pressured or biased to answer a certain way to fit in with the group. But not only can you do that on a paper form, but just a basic motivational interviewing kind of tool and practice of sitting down and letting that patient really have that shared decision-making power really gets you kind of to see exactly where they are at and that readiness to make that change. Of course, you can base it off of lots of theories in public health, like the trans-theoretical theory, but, you know, where are they at? Are they in that maintenance stage? Are they ready to do something new? Great, but how do you kind of supply them with the extra push that they need?
So community clinics, by definition, tend to provide support and service to the lower socioeconomic mm-hmm. classes. Mm-hmm. So they're already disadvantaged.
Right.
But how do you make it easier for them then to adapt? I mean, I've heard stories, particularly in the Northeast or New mm-hmm. York City as an example, well, they use what they call the bodegas, which mm-hmm. you know we would mm-hmm. call in North Carolina convenience stores.
Yes.
But
yes.
The bodegas, you know, typically, you know, carry high fructose syrup
right.
beverages and you know, poor snack choices, mm-hmm. right? But mm-hmm. introducing fruits and vegetables into the bodega or the convenience store, that's a challenge. But you guys have some experience in actually bringing
Yes. Yeah, we did the Healthy Corner Store initiative. So that was a really neat way to do exactly that in the convenience stores here locally, to go ahead and kind of work with the store owners and just see what happens. I think it's a big trial and error. Nutrition is always going to be something that you can try out different avenues to work with here. But we did exactly that with the Healthy Corner Store initiatives, where we were able to bring in fresh produce. And if you make it presentable and you put it in the right locations and you draw attention to it, people will choose it.
Right.
If it's available, they will come. So it's just a matter of switching that mindset that it's, you know, too expensive or no one's going to buy it. Well, yes, no one does want a molded banana or whatnot. But if it's there and it looks presentable, they're going to grab it as a quick snack. And then next thing you know, you've got these workers coming in every day. They're going to start depending on that. And they'll be like, where is the banana if you don't have it?
Right.
So you kind of almost have to do your habit forming with them.
Right, right.
But it's kind of subtle. It's a marketing technique at the end of the day.
You know, we know in the American food processing world, especially in the world of fruits and vegetables, is that, you know, the top selling, most popular fruits and vegetables aren't necessarily the most nutrient dense or phytoactive.
Right.
So what can we do as healthcare practitioners to try to at least increase the awareness?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll think twice about grabbing that banana.
Right.
And look for something that has higher nutrient density mm-hmm. or phytodensity, like blueberries.
Blueberries, yeah, no, absolutely. And it's, again, all about availability, too, and making it taste good. So blueberries in themselves, I'm sure we both agree, are super sweet, and we could use them as a dessert or a snack, but people might not gravitate towards them because they're in a smaller container. They may be more costly. But knowing that, again, they have options of frozen blueberries is also okay. It's going to be a good option to go ahead and swap out. But again, a lot of folks just are in their creatures of habit, and they like to do what they like, what they think they already like. So it's a hard sell originally, but if you give them sampling or taste testings or just have little options out for them to go ahead and sample and try, they're more open to it. It's hard for all of us to make changes like that, but I think it's something that again, if you don't offer it, they may never know. But it's not to say bananas are bad or blueberries are bad, but it's just a matter of what both are going to go ahead and offer you in the long term.
Now, you did a recent analysis looking at the cost of, say, fruits and vegetables versus, you know, fast food.
Yes.
And found them to be pretty cost effective. But not enough people know, and my guess is most practitioners don't know that there's a cost effectiveness that we can actually demonstrate on the selection of whole foods.
Yes.
More effectively, but tell us some of the insight that you gained from that analysis.
Yeah, so we are bombarded with fast food choices. It's every corner, everywhere. We have no problem spending $5 on a fast food meal, or to be exact, $4.65 on a local coffee shop drink that has all the bells and whistles, but it's full of just added sugars and things that we might not know even what it is at the end of the day. But when you can kind of convert that into grocery store pricing, we were able to find that 10 servings of fruits and vegetables actually comes under that one cup of coffee, for example, that you have no problem running in every morning and purchasing. So we always have the argument, is healthy food too expensive? I'm going to say no, it's not. It's just about what choices you're making throughout the day to kind of adhere to what your food budget might be. And you know, you can't go into the grocery store and buy only one cup of blueberries or, you know, one cup of grapes. But when you look at it from the perspective of that's going to give me a lot longer lifestyle and a lot longer satiety throughout the day, to me, it's an easy sell. It's an easy win. But our practitioners aren't really seeing that level of cost analysis and cost effectiveness. So it's something that's an educational tool we need to be able to provide them so that they can have those conversations with their patients.
Right. Yes, it seems to be kind of simple information that should be enough for that call for action, right?
But you'd think.
But with the profile of patient that you've seen in the community clinics, is it a bigger challenge than that? I mean, do they actually have to be diagnosed with a problem before they take action, or just the awareness?
A little bit of both, yes. Unfortunately, when they go to the grocery stores, they're not thinking about the cost effectiveness. They're thinking about perhaps what their kids are going to eat, what's a quick, easy meal. They might not want to make dinner. They might not have the time or the resources to make dinner. So what are they going to just be able to quickly grab? And unfortunately, that's not always going to be the healthiest choice that they could potentially make that day. But also perishability and kind of what to do with those tools and resources in the kitchen is an inhibiting factor. So teaching, again, folks how to actually prepare dishes and how quick it can be. You can make a really healthy dinner in, you know, 10 minutes or less. But again, until they see it and feel it, they don't believe you. So it's a matter of just like that show and tell almost.
So, you know, part of the study and the analysis that you recently did was really interesting, because if you look at how do you get 5 servings of fruits and another 5 servings of vegetables, so in theory you're talking about a total of 10 servings per day. There are a lot of different ways and choices that you can do. And the issue with that is that depending on how good you are at choosing the right fruit and vegetables, you'll get more or less nutrient density and more or less phytoactives. But I guess diversity is important.
Good.
At least it's a start. Mm-hmm. But it's complicated even by, well, I would describe it as a lack of a formal food policy in America. There is no government agency that's charged with food policy in America. And as a result, we're not doing as great of a job as we probably need to as a community to try to help people and point out to or encourage the farming community to grow more nutrient-dense and phytodense products. So you've got some experience in food policies. Is there a solution to at least increasing the awareness?
I think so. I do think there's a lot more consumers today that are more interested in this. They're becoming those advocates that we're talking about for their own health. So I'd like to think that we are on the right trajectory for this. I don't see one food policy fixing everything, because you could then argue with school lunches. You could argue with grocery store, food marketing, all of these different avenues you can then go. But I think we are doing a better job of recognizing that it is an issue. We've got all these physicians here who are really interested in that natural approach to health. And I think we're finally saying that message loud enough that hopefully everybody will understand what we've been saying for years and years and kind of go back to really knowing what's in your food and where it's coming from.
Yeah. So one of the challenges, I think everybody's heard about the Farm Bill and the Farm Act, and it's really kind of scary when you think about it, right? It's somewhere in the neighborhood, just a round estimate, $80 billion with a B, $80 billion a year are spent to support basically food, and that cascades into a variety of different programs, including SNAP, or also food stamps, or WIC, right? And those are all good programs. But they don't come with education. And so we're kind of throwing out a lot of money. But to your point, we need to educate consumers. What's the answer to that so that we have more effective spend of that $80 billion?
No kidding. I'm sure you all have seen some of these SNAP reports where fruits and vegetables don't even make the top 20 of spending allocations within the SNAP dollars that are being spent, which is, it's a shame because they have this opportunity to take advantage of this. We worked with several different grants in previous years where we tried to do such education, but unfortunately a lot of those folks are just in it to come get their money and leave, and they're not interested in learning what you have to say because, again, it hasn't resonated enough with them. And also, you know, kind of that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, they're more worried about feeding their family and keeping a roof over their head than they are caring about what's in that food that they're feeding their family. So it's kind of finding them at that right point to intersect with them and figuring out how you're going to make them that light bulb switch on for them. It's a tough field for sure, but unfortunately, unless government starts putting restrictions on what they can and can't buy at the grocery store, they're going to keep spending it. The fact that sodas are number one across the board in money spent at the grocery store for SNAP and non-SNAP dollars, it's cheap, it's there, and it's included.
It's the number one?
Number
really?
One on both.
Yeah, that's really kind of scary, isn't it?
Very scary.
Wow. You know, we have a good friend, a mutual friend, right, Frank Hu from mm-hmm. Harvard School of Public Health, who says, eat as many nuts as you can. As long as they're not donuts, then you'll be okay, right?
Exactly, exactly.
So, Frank, thanks for that insight if you're listening. So as a foodie, so how about a quick competitive check? I'll name two things. You tell me your choice.
Ooh, okay.
Right? Bananas or blueberries?
Blueberries.
Really? Beets or carrots?
Carrots.
Carrots or spinach?
Carrots.
Oh,
I know.
Really?
Yeah.
There's something here about carrots. So how about carrots and peas?
I do like peas.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. They're not very nutrient dense.
No,
they?
But they're good.
Yeah? Well, so this is a nutrient dense.
Well, it's sugar snap peas, or well, where are we talking?
Well, I was thinking about classic peas.
Ah, you know? Okay. Well, both are fine.
Peas? Oh, okay.
Okay.
So so that means you're still sick with carrots. So carrots and kale.
Oh, carrots.
Really?
Carrots or kale?
I'm coming to be more appreciative of kale if they're prepared. The problem is that when I like kale, it's usually with a lot of added cheese and other things that probably I shouldn't be consuming.
It's okay.
Anything. Fruits or vegetables?
Vegetables.
Really? You like mm-hmm. vegetables more than fruits?
I do like vegetables.
Wow, that's kind of a rare breed. Huh. Okay. Are you into culinary? Are you cooking?
I am.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I also cook with my little man at home, my child. I think that's the best way to get them involved in the kitchen.
Right. So Noah is
three.
I was gonna say four, right? Yeah. So are you teaching him how to cook and make choices?
You betcha, I am.
So what's the key to that?
Getting them involved early, knowing that that's what they're gonna have on the table is what you're gonna be giving them. So actually, I got him a kid-safe knife last year, and so he's involved in the whole prepping process and cooking process. So it's not surprising to see my kid take a whole bell pepper out of the refrigerator and bite into it like an apple. But unfortunately, you know, most
kids. I
gotta
get a picture of this.
Oh, I have. I've got plenty. Yes.
Really?
He's unfortunately the rare kid in his classroom that actually includes fruits and vegetables in his lunch.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We should be doing a podcast with him.
We should be doing a podcast with him. Yes. But I think that's where it starts, right? All of these things that we've just talked about has to start at a young age because this is all about family and lifestyle. And unfortunately, if you're teaching them at a young age, it does translate over their growth. And that's such an important thing that we're missing nowadays.
Cool. So here's the real test question for you. It's like, what was the first fruit or vegetable that your son was exposed to?
Avocado.
Oh my God, avocado. You know what most women say?
Oh gosh.
It's like a French fry. But that's not really a fruit or vegetable.
Unfortunately, right. Yeah, I guess it's
avocado. So what was his reaction when
he loved it.
Yeah?
He loved it.
I mean, it has kind of a nice
it's
texture.
It's smooth, soft. Yeah.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, you're a model for everybody listening today, so thanks for joining us. This has been the Holistic Matter Podcast, the podcast designed to help you become the you that nature intended. We're live at the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians Annual Convention, and we're with public health expert Megan Hamrock. Megan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This podcast features the song New Day by Lee Rosevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you liked this podcast, please share with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you next time on Holistic Matters, where we are talking about how to be the you nature intended.